everyone. Thanks for tuning into the Message podcast of Friends Church. My name is Alessandra. I'm one of the team members here, and we're so glad that you're joining us. It's been really encouraging to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening in. We really hope that our messages are resonating with you. We also wanted to say thank you to those who are contributing to Friends Church. All of the things we're able to do, it's because of people who donate regularly. Even small, consistent gifts help a lot. If you haven't had the chance yet to give, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that, especially if it's been beneficial in your own journey. To do that, it's really easy. Just go to our website, friendschurch.ca, and click on the Donate tab, or download our Friends Church app and click on the Give tab. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy this week's message.
Hey, good morning, live streamers. Welcome to Friends Church. My name is Vince, the other Vince. This is my quarantine beard. And yes, I know you're thinking it. Yes, I'm wearing pants. Welcome. If you're, this is new for all of us in so many ways. And so first of all, thank you to the band for playing out some great music. Couple things. You're either listening from YouTube or you're listening from the Facebook app. And what's really interesting is a way that we can connect. This is the spiritual gym. We came here to work out. And if there, it's like going to your gym every day. It's Gold's Fitness. Everything's perfect. Everything's where it used to be. And all of a sudden you show up to the gym and nothing is what it used to be. Nothing is the same. Nothing is the same. So this is kind of like that for us. So, you know, your grace and your patience and your kindness is widely appreciated. And seeing your comments live on Facebook, it's like you're right here in front of me. So a couple things. One, on the app, if you go to the Friends Church Calgary app or on Android or iPhone, you can open up there. There's things like events. So things that used to be live are now on Zoom. You can find out there. Secondly, in the Facebook app, you know, can you play with us? Can you like? Can you say stuff? Did you like the song? You know, should Vince eat more McDonald's? You know, whatever that is important and relevant. And about the message, what's resonating? And secondly, is tell us where you're from. Where are you tuning in from? We're seeing numbers on the podcast of downloads from all over the place outside of Calgary, and that's really exciting. Friends is this really unique place where we get to work out in the spiritual gym and in a way that allows us to wrestle with our own journey, which is amazing for me because I get to challenge and ask questions that I've never asked before. Lastly, contribute. We are self-funded. We exist because you gave us some money. So whether it's a one-time donation or a contributing, pre-authorized giving donation, we no donation is too small, and of course no donation is too big. You can do that again on the app. You just click give, or on the website you go to the hamburger and you'd hit the drop down and you can see donate. All your funds allows Friends Church to A, function as a business, and B, take care of the people who are, regardless of what the challenge is, it gives them an opportunity to help them through you. So thank you very much. I love you. Hope you're enjoying today. Don't forget on Facebook to participate. It's your church. It's your place to wrestle with your own journey. Happy Easter.
It started in a manger. There was no place for him at the inn. Strangers had showed up to see what had come. The boy, Jesus, who's named after his ancestor Joshua, meaning one who saves.
For 30 years, his life was unremarkable. And then, at a wedding reception that had run out of wine, something special happened. Jesus, now a man, stepped into something more, a rabbi, a teacher, a savior.
The next 3 years are a flurry of activity, teaching, healing, making the world a better place. And then there's a misstep, a political misstep, and Jesus is arrested for crimes against the tradition. Ultimately, he's arrested for crimes against power.
That is where the Easter story begins, in a garden with Jesus and his students, one man betrayed with a kiss, his students stepping up to defend, but Jesus calms them, and so he's arrested. My way is not violence.
The trial starts with the authorities of tradition. You aren't doing this right, they accuse. To which Jesus poses a question. The answer is not to their liking. But they didn't like it from the beginning. But Jesus defends no more. My way is not violence.
The religious authorities turn Jesus over to power, to the leader of the day, Pilate, who inquires, "Are you a threat to my power?" To which he replies, "I never said that I was."
And so Pilate stops caring. But the people won't have it. They've already made their decision. Death is the only answer. But Jesus says, no more. My way is not violence.
Pilate has Jesus tortured, treated like the treasonous, tearing his body to shreds, shaming him publicly, and trying to destroy him, mind, body, and soul. Still, Jesus is silent. My way is not violence.
They nail his hands and feet to a wooden cross, pulling it up vertically, the most painful way they could devise. And as Jesus hangs there dying, he turns to his tormentors and says,
"I forgive you. Violence is not my way." And so he dies. Something of Jesus lives on after his death, something that spoke to the people that knew him, something that speaks to us, something that inspires us.
This calls us to something more, to be something more, and to take up his call.
For something in the way the Easter story goes strikes something inside so many of us, asking us to explore, you know, what are we willing to live for? What are we living for? What are we willing to die for?
Could it be that that silent mantra resonates in our hearts? Which is why today on Easter Sunday, we say together, my way is not violence.
Amen.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Friends Church. Happy Easter. And what a strange Easter this has been, hasn't it? We ended up cooking food ahead of time and dropping them off at my partner's kids. We look around and this place is empty. It's pretty much going to go down in history as one of the strangest Easters I've ever been a part of. And you know, as we work through this new reality, as we try and figure out what does this pandemic mean to us, I find, as I talk to people, they're doing some deep thinking. They're reassessing their values, what they think's important. They're asking questions, why was I doing that before? And now that I don't have it anymore, is that something I still value? And so even though in the midst of all the chaos of not knowing what's going on, I see people digging deep and growing and figuring out more about their life, kind of their deeper values. But I was having a conversation with my friend. We're talking about all the learning we've done through this time and all the growth that we've had. And he said something that was really poignant. He said, "Vince, I don't know how long it's going to take until we forget what we learned right now." And that stuck with me. How do we keep the learning from our past into a future? Let's be honest. When they lift the isolation, I am going to go hog wild. I'm going to go to the theater every night for like months, I think. My partner's like, I'm going to have a hug fest. I'm going to hug everyone and anyone. You're a stranger, I don't care. You're getting a hug because I haven't had a hug for months. But through all that kind of release of all the tension, how do we keep these moments, the learning that we have right now, how do we keep these front of mind? And not just for days, not just for weeks, but for months and for years. How do we do that? And that's what we want to talk about today. How do we keep the learning from our past and keep it into the future when the future doesn't have the same situation anymore? How do we not forget the stuff that we've learned? The Jewish community actually is a master of remembering. You guys can't see, and I wish I could flip the camera around, but this is a Jewish temple. We work with them all the time, and they have figured out a technology that allows them to remember things way beyond what we do. In fact, right now, they're celebrating a story from approximately 4,000 years ago. Does anyone remember anything or even have family stories from, let's say, 200 generations ago? 200. That's like your great times 200 grandparent. And yet, every Jewish kid, every Jewish family can remember the story down to the details. That's incredible, what they can remember. And the story that they're remembering right now comes from way in the past, but it's a story when their nation, the precursors to the Jewish nation, was the Israelite nation. The Israelite nation was at a time of fantastic and fundamental change. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? For them, they've been oppressed. They are slaves to a large oppressor. And the story goes that the divine God, however you want to say it, the character in the story, God, calls in a hero to save the people. And the hero, like all heroes, is deeply flawed. He's shy, but he has some amount of privilege, so there's power he can use. He's a murderer, but he did it in defense of somebody who's weak, so that might make him a savior, we're not sure. He's got a speech impediment, and yet he's called to speak in public. And he goes, the hero goes to the oppressor and says, I want you to let my people go. Enough free labor, enough slavery, let us go. And to which the oppressor would reply, like you would guess, why? Why would I get rid of free labor? Why would I let you guys go? Why would I do that? I'm getting everything that I want, and I couldn't give two shakes about you. And so then the story goes that the character God in the story calls the people and says, I want you to have a meal, a special meal. Take the best cuts of lamb, roast them over a fire so you can smell it. Cook the lamb with bitter herbs and flatbread. And then eat it together. But it isn't like now where you go to the grocery store and you have like a little styrofoam package, saran wrap, says lamb on top. No. The lamb's living outside in your backyard. So they went outside and they butchered the lamb. But here's the key of the story. The lamb's blood that was spilled in the butchering of that lamb, they were instructed to paint on the door jambs of their houses. So that every Israelite had blood on the door of their door jambs of their houses. And then they ate the meal and they went to sleep. And they woke up in the middle of the night to screams. You see, a pandemic had hit their area. And every household without blood on the door jamb, their firstborn child was killed. And the screams that the Israelites heard were the screams of their oppressors having to deal with the death of the people that they loved. And yet not one of the families of the Israelites, not one of the families that had blood painted on the door jamb were impacted. Death passed them over that day. In the morning, their oppressors said, leave. We don't want you here anymore. You're free. It's a story from over 4,000 years ago, and yet every Jewish kid can tell you the details, that there were bitter herbs with the lamb, and that all that that story meant about freedom and about the beginning of a society. And they do it by year in and year out, ritualizing that same meal. They cook it the same way. They recount the same parts of the story. And through that technology of ritual, they literally can remember a story that no one alive knows. It happened before we even had written language. It's so far in the past. They can remember it like it was yesterday. And they can take all the learning from 4,000 years ago and bring it into this moment. What if we use that technology to keep the learning from this time in our lives? What if we use that technology to remember the larger parts of our lives? We do it all the time. We have the ritual of birthdays, right? In June, when was my birthday? We usually spend some time trying to figure out how old I am now, right? It ties us back to how much of our lives we've lived. If I'm with my dad, he usually wants to tell me stories about the day I was born and what happened and you did this and your mom did this and then I did this. He takes a moment 47 years in the past and he can remember it like yesterday because we ritualize our birthday. Let's go deeper than that. Just before this whole isolation piece happened, I was in Manitoba visiting my family. And one of the things I do there is every time I go back, I go to the graveyard where my mom's buried. It was cold this time, like just Manitoba cold, like the coldest wind you've ever experienced. And I sat out there freezing my butt off in front of her gravestone, and I just talked to her. Told her how my life was going, told her how my family was going. Even though she's been gone 7 years, it was like she was right there. It's the power of ritual. We can bring people who've been dead and bring them back into the present like they're still alive and still with us today. I have a friend who had a profound psychological realization recently. Some wound from their childhood that they're starting to become aware of and starting to work through and understand. And they've had a piece of jewelry created to remind them. And every day, they take that piece of jewelry and they put it around their neck and they remember that day, however many years ago, when I learned something about myself. I don't need to do that anymore. That's hurtful to me. I don't need to be there. It's ritual. Every morning. The 12-step community actually are masters at this. You ask anyone in recovery, say, how long have you been sober? Chances are they know exactly how long. Because the 12-step community creates ritual around how long have you been sober. Your first month, you get a little coin. First year, you get a coin. I know people who keep it in their pocket, so when they forgot the moment and they go, I just want to do that thing that I know is bad for me, but it would feel so good to do it right now. They pull it out and remember, 5 years ago, I hit rock bottom. They never want to go back there again. So they have a ritual to remember that moment. Ritual is an incredible technology. It's an incredible thing for our brain that we can literally remember things days, weeks, months, years, decades, centuries, millennia in our past and bring it all into the present moment. So my question for you is, what do you need ritualized in your life?
Yeah, that's the question that needs to be, actually the real important question that needs to be asked is what meaningful event in your life does this ritual connect you back to? Because if they don't take you back to something where you experience some kind of change or meaning, man, those rituals, they can just become dead. I mean, haven't we all, are we back? Sorry. All right, haven't we all, like, sat in the middle of a ritual, a ceremony of some type? We may not have said it right out loud, but we were thinking it. We're going, why am I even here? Like, I don't even understand the relevance or the value of this ceremony. And you sit there and bored and you're thinking about all the different things you can be doing. Yeah, we've been there. We've been a part of the rituals that lack meaning. But I'm telling you, when you are able to look back and experience something meaningful, some event in your life, and you ritualize it, oh, then it comes alive. Jesus had no use for dead rituals. In fact, he was continually calling BS to a lot of it. But he knew the power of real ritual. Yeah, he was together with his disciples, all his closest guys, one night. He looked them all in the eyes, he got all their attention, and he said, boys, it's been 3.5 years. We have seen and experienced some unbelievable times in those 3.5 years, hey? He said, my time is coming to an end. And I'm worried that you're going to forget everything you've experienced, watching and learning as we've done all that we've done. He said, here's what we're going to do. He said, we're going to take this loaf of bread, we're going to take some wine, and he says, what I'm going to ask you to do is build a ritual that you're going to do again and again, as often as you can remember. Every time you take that bread and you eat it and you drink that wine, here's what we're going to do. You're going to remember back over these last 3.5 years, those moments that changed your life. I can't help but wonder what those guys started reminiscing about that evening. I wonder if Peter wasn't sitting there as it came his turn to talk. If he wouldn't have looked at Jesus and said, man, when I started following you, I just wanted to be the man like you. I just want to be a rock star. I want to have everyone looking at me the way they looked at you, Jesus. The way they clamored to be around you. Oh, I just wanted that so bad. But then that night, when we were all sitting around, and you pulled out the water and you stripped right down, you put the towel around your waist, and you said you're going to wash our feet. Do you remember that? And I was going, no way. I'm not having the rabbi wash my feet. Forget it. And you said, if you don't get what this is all about right here, Peter, you missed it. And I remember being so embarrassed. And then it's like the lights went on. I wonder if Peter didn't tell that story. I wonder if one of the other guys didn't say, man, the lights for me went on over the last 3.5 years, that one day when we were at the well, and you start talking to that Samaritan woman. We had never talked to the Samaritans, let alone some divorced Samaritan woman. And there you were, Jesus. It's like she was the most important person you met that day. And you just cared and you gave. Man, the lights came on. I had never before experienced a love that seemed to jump over race and gender and past cultural norms. I'd never saw it until that moment. That, for me, was a life changer. Yeah. Bet they sat there and went, man, I'm going to remember that story. I'm going to remember the way that that changed the way I look at people. Yeah, every time I pick up that bread and that wine, I'm going to remember that story. Let me ask you something. Has there been a moment, looking back over your life, when things shifted? When something happened and the lights came on spiritually for you? Can you think back to a time? A young woman wrote me this week about her moment. She says, oh, I can remember a moment. My moment? Oh, yeah. She said it happened when a person in her life went off the deep end with Christianity. Those are her words. She said this person began sharing these extreme religious beliefs that were so condemning, judgmental, so unlike what she thought that it was all about. She said it infuriated me. Kept thinking to myself, this can't be what Christianity is about. This can't be how Christians are supposed to think and act. Come on. Would Jesus have said things like this person is saying? Please tell me no. She said, as this person began talking, and she says, and the anger was rising up. She said, it crushed me. I just felt so disillusioned. But she said, that created a season where my moment happened, where probably for the first time in my life, I began shedding things that I had just inherited, beliefs that just were handed to me. And I just took in full faith. She said, no, I started searching. I started wrestling. I started looking for really what this thing really is all about. She said, that season was where my moment happened. And the lights came on for me. My journey became more valuable than ever. There's another guy who wrote me. He told me his moment was a season that happened 2 years ago when he was on the verge of a marital collapse and divorce, feeling so low. So much darkness in his life, so badly craving something more than what he had. He was desperate for change, he said. He said, this season where I just always had made life about me, he says, it humbled me. He began listening and reading books, relationship books, podcasts. He just started downloading, trying to learn a new way of loving. Loving the people in his life. He said, in his words, he began burning off anything that didn't serve a higher purpose than just merely serving himself. He said, everything about his visit, that pivotal moment, pointed him to an unselfish way of living. He said, my moment in the midst of my darkest time, that's where it happened, because it pointed me to a new way of living. You know, I know for some of you who are listening, your moment did show up in the lowest time of your life. I know you've told your stories. For some of you, it was a financial collapse that led you into your moment. For some, it was an addiction that took you into a recovery group where you began to experience your moment. For some of you, it was when you came out of the closet, finally. For some, it was at a funeral of someone that you loved more than life. And it shook you to your core. For some, it was so unexpected. You were right in the middle of reading a book, and there was a principle, or there was a concept, or there was something, a phrase that someone wrote, and you're reading it, and it just went... And you began to see life in a new way. It opened up something for you. And you went, wait a second. Could have happened in a conversation you had with someone. A podcast you were listening to. And all of a sudden it was just like, wait, what? Wait a second. These moments that happen so often unexpected that just launch something inside of us. Challenging us to something deeper. It's like walking into a room and you start looking around and you're going, wait, what? There's more. There's something deeper. These moments have a way of reshaping our lives, redefining why we're here. What it is that we're living for. They can give our lives new sense of meaning and hope. And when you remember them, when you're drawn back to them, when you go back and are reminded of what life was like before, but then now, how different you see life. Oh. Yeah, they can take you back. If you can go back and see the darkness, the desperation, maybe just the confusion or the lostness prior to that moment. And then you see how that moment began to shift things. Oh. They have a way of invigorating and energizing our journeys, of infusing us again with a sense of purpose, clarity, focus around what it is that we're living for.
My family was unbelievably embarrassing when I was a kid. I remember being in South Dakota one time. We were sitting in a restaurant. We were on holidays. We didn't eat out very often. I ordered a waffle. I love waffles. Shows up on my table. The lady puts it down. It's like covered in whipped cream and like all the good things that you want on a waffle. But I knew I couldn't eat it because my dad would stop us all after all the food landed on her plate. We'd all bow our heads. And then my dad would pray out loud in front of a packed restaurant. And as a 10-year-old boy, that was not awesome. It was ungodly embarrassing, right? And I knew that I couldn't get away without doing it. I had to do it because that's what our family did. And I didn't know if it was that my dad just really wanted to embarrass us all or what was going on there. As I look back now, I realize that this had nothing to do with embarrassing his kids. This had nothing to do with kind of being really standout-ish in a restaurant. No, for my parents, this moment, this prayer, pointed them back to something from their childhood, from their past. The moment that they said, this Christian tradition is going to shape our lives. It's going to color how we live. It's going to change how we behave in the world. And so what we have is we have this moment where my parents have this ritual that they do day in and day out. Every day before we pray or before we go to bed, they would pray and say, okay, we're going to pray to remember this moment from our past that said, we are going to live this way. Our lives will be influenced by this tradition. So the question then becomes, what ritual, what moment, what, as Jeff was talking, what moment from your past, your spiritual past came up? Was it a moment where something, again, just like you said, what you read or what you experienced or a big change in your life, and also you went, ah, this moment needs to shape the rest of my life? And how do you ritualize that? In my family, it was you pray before you eat. Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter who you're with. You pray. You bow your heads and you pray. I know some people who have prayer rituals. Some people do it in the morning on the drive to work, when we used to drive to work. For some people, it's an email that they get daily and they meditate on it. It's one of the things that I do. I get an email every morning from this certain community. It just helps me center myself and go, yeah, you're right. This is what I need to work on. This is the direction of my life. For some people, it's what they do. It's what they say. Whatever your ritual is, it points back to the moment that Jeff talked about that said, from now on, my life will be different. It will be colored by that experience, just like my parents. People have asked us often, why do you do Sunday mornings at 10:30? Let's be honest. If I could show you what's going on here, there's a lot of stress to have this thing happen live at 10:30. To all you techs out there, thank you. The musicians, thank you. It would be so much nicer if we could record this all, and then when things go bad, we could just edit that out or clean that up or fix this or take care of that, right? Oh, Vince, don't say that. We're just going to edit that out. Or try that again, Vince. Let's try that. You're not on your best game here. That would be infinitely easier. But why do we do this at 10:30 on Sunday mornings, even when it would be easier for us to do it differently? It's for the same reason that my parents prayed before every meal. Because there's something about the spiritual gym at 10:30 in the morning that's ritualized for us, isn't it? Something happened in our lives and we went, wait a second, I need the spiritual gym. It's not because there's something magical about Sundays or there's something magical about 10:30, although you do get to sleep in a little bit, but it's not too late. You know, anyways, it's not that. It's the ritual. The ritual that at some point in your life you said, I need to tie into something regular to remember my spiritual journey, to remember why I want something more in my life. Quite often, we see you guys, something happens in your life, your kids will pick up some soccer game and it's on Sundays, or you know, you pick up a work shift, and then you go a couple months without being at the spiritual gym. And we reach out and say, hey, how's it going? And usually you go something along the lines of this, I just remember that I forgot. And the lack of ritual in my life has had me slowly starting to fade out of the direction I want to go. And I need to get back. The ritual of Sundays at 10:30 is powerful. And not only are we at this ritual, we're also at a yearly ritual where there's the Easter story. You heard it at the very beginning. Thanks to everyone for creating that for us. It was beautiful. That ritual for me, every year, I remember the moment when I went, I know I haven't been part of this Christian tradition for a long time because it didn't fit me, but maybe I can change some things and now I can be a part of this. For me, it allowed me to get back to my tradition in a new way, not the way it was shared with me when I was a kid, in a new way, in a way that fits me. I think about all the times that I've been with family over Easter. And the celebration today brings back all those memories. Even though I can't be with my family today, I'll be with my partner and that'll be awesome, but everyone else is going to be videoed in. But it helps me remember that. It helps me remember the core of the story of why I'm part of this community. Why I want to give my life to inspire people to make the world a better place. Why I do that. Every year, it recenters me and goes, that's right. This is why I do what I do. I'm not sure what Easter does for you. I'm not sure even where it takes you. But chances are, these weekly rituals, these yearly rituals, they tie you back to the reason that you're here in the first place. It says, I want something more in my life. The day in and day out, the dog eat dog. There's something more for me here.
You know, a couple of Easters ago, for those who would be listening who are here, we did something interesting. We actually told the story of Yom Kippur. We are kind of expanded on what happens in this Jewish celebration and ceremony, ritual that they hold annually. But we talked about how they take this goat and they would bring it to the edge of the city. They would tie a big long red string on that goat. That red long string would represent the collective mistakes and failures, shortcomings of the community. And they would release that goat into the wild. And it would symbolically represent everything that they felt shame about, their past, stuff that they were embarrassed of, things that they were trying to hide in their lives. That goat was walking off into the wilderness, never to return. And it was to be a symbolic act of being able to let go of this stuff that was crowding us out. So we did actually our version, Friends Church version of that. And for you that were there, we had these recipe cards. We just asked you, write down everything that you are embarrassed of, everything that holds shame, power over you in your life. Write it down. Write down mistakes, things that you don't want, you've never told anyone. Write it down. Write it down. And then we had everyone come up. Do you remember that? We had a burn barrel, and people came and dropped their cards into that burn barrel. And then we walked out onto the patio, and we lit that thing on fire. And it was our version of Yom Kippur. It was our version of saying, whatever you've done, everything that is holding you back, that has this shameful power over you, you've said goodbye to it today. It's been burned up. So that was 2 years ago. I'm betting that if I looked you honestly in the eye and I said, you know what, tell me something. 2 years later, what kinds of things are sitting in your mind that you hold you, make you ashamed, that you don't want anyone to know about? What skeletons lie in your closet you're hoping no one will ever find out about? You know what I'm betting? I'm betting that some of those things that were written on your card and burned in that burn barrel 2 years ago have slid their way back into your life. This right here, folks, is why ritual, repetitive ritual, is so valuable, because we forget. We forget. We lose track of what happened way back. We lose track of the person that we once were, and then the changes that we made, and the new way. Now, if you're like me, I'm telling you, every week I'm in the gym, I'm going, okay, I can do this. That last relationship series, my primitives, I gotta get under control. I gotta stop reacting that way when someone says something that... And 3 days later, and then over time, given enough time, I even forgot about that decision I made to handle those primitives. This, friends, is why we're talking about the power of ritual. This Easter service, Vince said he had to do some theological wrangling to find meaning in this ritual from what he once knew as a kid. I feel the same way. There was a time when Easter had lost its meaning. It became so much theology that I wasn't sure about. I remember this passage where Jesus just was simplifying it. And for everyone, he's going, look it. Let's boil it down. Can you just love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself? I remember in that season, my spiritual journey just going, that's it. That's where I am. That's what I can focus on. Easter now for me, it's like I just envision Jesus looking at me going, Jeff, love God and love your neighbors yourself. That's it. I look at his life. I go, that's it. So today, I'm reminded. I'm just using this ritual. Just say, Jeff, come on back. Come on back. Remember that day? You're getting all complicated. You're making all... No. Come back. Love God and love your neighbor. And God, the more than, the source, life, energy. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But love my neighbor? Oh, I can start there. Yeah. Easter for me. Coming back. So I don't forget. Is there parts of the change that happened in your life way back? Decisions you made. Things you said, no, that's my old clothes. I'm wearing new clothes now. I'm going to be a different person. Is there the things, decisions you made back, going back to your moment, that you've lost track of? Even in the last year, here is your moment. Here's your moment to remind yourself to go back and go, oh, that's right. This is who I am. Our prayer is that this Easter Sunday, you revisit your moment. And I don't know where you are. Maybe you're sitting beside someone, or the kids are screaming around you and you're half paying attention to the screen right now. Maybe you're cooking some turkey. I don't know. I hope in whatever place you are, no matter who's around, that you would take a moment to revisit your moment, reconnect through this ritual today, and be reminded once again of what it is that you're living for. Look, we're done. And I just want to say on behalf of the team here, the Skelton crew, we want to wish you a big happy Easter, no matter whether you're alone or you have family, whether you're going to be on Zoom later or whatever. Make this the most extraordinary Easter ever. Next week, we continue on our apocalypse series. And I'm going to talk about what could be one of the potentially hugely positive byproducts of COVID-19. Can't wait to talk about it. So, hope you'll join us midweek as well. We got some stuff going on. Have a great Easter, everyone. We'll see you soon.